Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score Baseball Insider Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. It all starts right here, right now, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station, presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good morning, baseball people. On a Saturday morning in late October, and the playoffs are rolling. Got two games again today. Could have both pennants being clinched on the same day for the first time since 1992. Not featuring either the Cubs or the White Sox, of course, but there's plenty of local news to discuss, and we will do so this morning. Good morning, Bruce Levine. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Matt. Yeah, there is plenty to discuss. There's been a very hot national story locally here about Tony La Russa and the White Sox. We're going to get into that, and we're going to hear from you, the Chicago baseball fans, on that. Cubs, Sox, everything baseball. We're going to explore the playoffs with you. Great guests today, including Danny Evans, former assistant general manager of the White Sox, general manager of the Dodgers. And Joe Madden, a familiar name in Chicago, joining us as well at 10 o'clock to discuss a little bit of the playoffs and the regular season, and maybe a little about Tony La Russa as well. The number is 312-644-6767. Text Matt at the same number, as we are interested in what your thoughts are on the playoffs as well as what's going on with your Chicago baseball teams.
Yeah, looking forward to talking to Joe for sure, among all the things you discussed. And there's also this, Bruce, that the final four in Major League Baseball, the baseball presidents or GMs are Andrew Friedman, Joe's former boss with the Rays, and three guys who once worked for Andrew Friedman. That's the final four in MLB. So what is it about Andrew Friedman and the Rays way? It's one of the things we'll ask Joe about along the way. But I think people have been wanting to hear from you and hear from us about this Tony La Russa situation. What is the state of the news, as best you can describe it according to your sources, Bruce, in terms of who the managerial candidates are? Is it Tony's job to turn down? When are they going to talk? Those kind of things. What can you tell people?
Well, here's the chronology, Matt. Nobody can talk to A.J. Hinch or Alex Cora until the World Series ends, okay? They're both under a year-long suspension, which ends on the last day of the World Series. And after that, they are free to come back from their suspensions once they're sanctioned again by Major League Baseball to move ahead. And that is the only time people can talk to these two very attractive candidates. Yes, they are very attractive candidates, even though they're serving suspensions for different forms of cheating in 2017. Now, in normal situations, Matt, people just wink-wink when they say they can't talk during the playoffs or the World Series. In this case, I've been told by Major League Baseball executives that if anybody is caught talking to these two guys, or even on the periphery, that there would be millions of dollars of fines, and that the suspensions could be reignited for both guys. So this is one where people just have to stay away from Hinch and from Cora at this particular point in time. I think that's significant. I think it's something that people have to look at, because the White Sox will interview likely one or both of those candidates. I would say one at least in Hinch, who would be a front runner for that job with that very fine team on the South Side. But we're going to have to wait for that. In the meantime, you know, the story came out here, and from all my reporting and information, the conversations have most likely already taken place between Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and Tony La Russa. And Tony La Russa, from all my reporting, is contemplating whether or not he hasn't been offered the job yet, but they certainly know that he has, that he knows that they have interest. And from all the people I talk to know the situation, Tony is trying to consider whether or not at his age and at his experience and at this time, whether or not he could see himself managing 200 games in the 2021. And that's certainly what it takes, including spring training and the wear and tear of travel and just the mental and physical beating that guys take that are half his age in that job. So I think, you know, the idea of Sox fans worrying about the fact that there's this old guy and he's lurking and he can't wait to take the job, I think that's false. I think that there's a lot of thought process that has to go through here on both Tony's side and the White Sox side as to where they go with the story. Is there a real interest in Tony La Russa by the White Sox? Yes. Is Tony interested in possibly managing? Yes. The rest is all story waiting to happen. So we don't know how this is going to shake out, but that's the chronology of where we're at right now with the White Sox.
It's been really fascinating to watch and kind of be a part of the reaction and the evolution of feelings on it this week for White Sox fans, who I think overall were thrilled that the organization made the difficult decision to move on from both Ricky Renteria and Don Cooper. And it treat this moment with the gravitas it deserves. Like, here, this is a very good team. Let's not have a manager who still needs to grow strategically, as good as he's been for everybody. Let's get somebody who is ready to do everything that needs to be done to win. I think most people celebrated that, and I know a lot of Sox fans felt good about that. But then the La Russa news hits, and a lot of people thought it was fake at first, or just a favor from the reporter to the owner, and that whole thought process. And I what it's about, Bruce, what it ends up being about is that look, Tony is obviously a Hall of Fame manager, and there's things that he's being ripped for that he does not deserve to be ripped for this week. The idea that he's not into analytics is absurd. I mean, he's one of the godfathers of it. He and Dave Duncan with their binders in the A's dugouts before anybody had stuff. But, you know, before anybody was looking at it like that, he was doing it from the dugout, not from the front office. Being ripped for being old is ageist and a bit, on the face of it, unfair. But what it is...
Well, you do it to me every week, though.
lovingly, sir.
Most of the time.
Yeah, but what it is, it feels like what the White Sox have done for decades in terms of looking backwards to bring back a favorite son. And everything they've done the last 5 years has felt like moving forward. Like, we are now a state-of-the-art organization. We're a big boy organization, and we get the best that we can. We're at the forefront of technologically, finally. We have this tremendous team. We've got everything. We're moving forward. And now it feels very much like old school White Sox. And I think that's the feeling for fans that they can't shake. No matter how much they try to talk themselves into La Russa's viability right now, it just feels like the owner stepping in and saying, no, this is how we do things, as opposed to the forward momentum of the last 5 years. That's the feeling that I get from the fans anyway, Bruce.
I think it's very well put. there's a lot of angst out there, particularly on social media, about why would we want this old dude who hasn't managed for 9 years to be the manager of the White Sox? And, you know, I understand that thinking. I mean, you know, fans and people out there do not really necessarily understand whether Tony La Russa is still relevant by the standards of 2020. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, I did hear from a source, Matt, and I don't know if this is true or not, that the White Sox are actually waiting to see which presidential candidate loses before they name their next manager, and that the loser would be a candidate as well for the manager's job.
Look at
but
you.
I haven't had a second source on that.
Nonetheless, I like that you're punching up in terms of age. This is what my dad has done. My 87-year-old father, Bruce. Now, when he tells jokes about old guys, they're 95-year-old guys. Like he has to keep finding older guys to make the punchline as he does.
Well,
it.
You know, there's plenty of people out. There's plenty of people in our world that believe both President Trump and Joe Biden are too old to run for office or be the president. Nonetheless, that's the case. So getting back to reality, you know, I think the age variable is one that I understand, and I think it's consistent with people wanting a young, energetic guy like Cora or AJ Hinch, who have both won recently, been a part of world championship teams. But what's missing here is the idea that there's a trust factor with Tony La Russa, and the fact that he would use his coaches significantly. He would be able to communicate with younger people, as he was running a baseball team as recently as 4 years ago with the Arizona Diamondbacks. He would be able to talk the analytics, as you put forth. He would have analytics people that are state of the art in what they do. So from all of that angst, you know, it's interesting, because people have a hard time imagining that an older guy like Tony La Russa would be still on top of his game. The question, I guess, most of all, is whether or not Tony feels that he can handle this. And I think he's going to be the last guy that wants to go in there and embarrass himself and embarrass the White Sox and embarrass his friend Jerry Reinsdorf by not being able to handle the rigors mentally and physically of a 200-game Major League season. And whether or not Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams and Jerry Reinsdorf decide that Tony is the best candidate and they do offer him the job. So there's plenty of area to cover there before we get to the angst of White Sox fans not wanting Tony La Russa.
I have to say, Bruce, that there are hardcore recent baseball reasons why I don't like the idea of Tony La Russa managing this team. From my perspective, he won the World Series with the Cardinals in 2011, in the final year, but it was really ugly, that World Series, in terms of bullpen management, mistakes with the bullpen phone and Derek Lilliquist taking the heat for that and saying it was too loud there. It was odd miscommunication. And then the Diamondbacks tenure that you mentioned, he and Dave Stewart as a combination were a laughingstock around the league about how that team went. And when Mike Hazen was hired and Tony stepped down and said, I think they've got the right people. They've got good people. They know what they're doing, and they have known what they're doing, and they've looked a lot better. They've run a lot smoother since Tony left. So I think the last two stops for Tony in a baseball sense have been really, really not great, especially the Arizona tenure. So that's among my concerns.
Well, you missed one stop. I think that's interesting, and I think it's relevant. You missed one stop, and that's the 2018 Boston Red Sox, who won a World Series. And Tony was right there at the forefront with Dave Dombrowski running that team and hiring Alex Cora as the manager. So I think there's a perspective that has to be looked at. When Tony La Russa comes in and is a part of a team, He's not there just collecting a paycheck. He has input. He has authority. He has the ear of the guy running the team. And that's certainly what the case was when he was with the Boston Red Sox. And it's certainly the case now that he's working with the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. And we'll be talking to Joe Maddon at 10 o'clock a little bit about Tony and what he has been able to communicate with him during his time with him during spring training and in the past. So I think that you know, your points are very relevant and interesting. But, you know, again, when it comes to who ends up being the manager of the Chicago White Sox, it's a decision made by three people. And that decision will be it'll be unanimous by the time they decide who to ask and who ends up managing the Chicago White Sox going forward in 2021.
We're about to go to a call here on 670 The Score, but first, Adam Studzinski back at the shop. Let's let people hear Dennis Eckersley, who was the closer for Tony La Russa and is still close with him, as you'll hear. Eck working in Boston these days with Red Sox pre and post and sometimes during the games, was on WEEI, our sister station, and was asked about Tony La Russa and the White Sox.
That Chicago White Sox job. And he actually came out and said if he had to say it now, he's 75% chance it's Tony La Russa's job if he wants it. Now, that surprised the hell out of me, Eck. I mean, I know he's your boy, 76. The game is what it is. The players are young.
Yeah.
Does that make sense to you?
Now, I'll tell you what. My gut, I just talked to Tony this morning, but I wouldn't tell you what I talked about. But my gut tells me no. You know, that's the only situation he would go to, though. Because he has such a great relationship with Reinsdorf.
Yeah.
But it doesn't make any sense, does it? I mean, it just doesn't. But if Tony wants to do it, he's going to do it. And my gut tells me he won't, they won't. One or the other, you know what I mean?
So X a little bit all over the place.
I'm getting a headache. I'm getting a bad headache from that.
But I love that some of us have been so confused by this story during the course of the week, and there's a guy who talked to Tony that morning and sounds as confused as anyone about the situation, frankly.
He should take it, but he shouldn't take it. He will take it if it's offered. I don't know if he should take it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
If there's any job
all
to
that
take,
in one...
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of Dennis Eckersley, if you know him. He's... He is at the forefront of, you know, up and back and very, very honest, straightforward guy. But he's basically telling you, and my interpretation of it is, I talked to Tony, I got the intel that they're talking, and I still don't know whether or not this is going to happen or not.
This is Joe on the Northwest
like all
side.
Of us.
Yeah, seemingly like all of us. Joe on the Northwest side, you're on 670 The Score, you're on Inside the Clubhouse. Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, good morning, Bruce and Matt. How you doing today?
Good.
You know, as a Cubs fan, I want to remind, you know, White Sox fans here that don't put all the blame on Renteria, who during the build-up was virtually, you know, hired to be fired, sort of the story of Rick Renteria Part 2. But when you look at no fault for Renteria here, you can't blame him for injuries, players that didn't pan out, or a COVID-19 sort of shortened season. But the Sox improved, you know, in the shortened season with their standings, their exciting offense, and, you know, sort of crossing the finish line to make the playoffs. But White Sox fans right now, I think they're going to be divided into three groups. You got your Hinch fans, your Cora fans, and your La Russa fans. If Hinch or Cora, in my opinion, is hired and fails, a lot of Sox fans are obviously going to be happy. But if you bring in the law firm of La Russa, Duncan, and Oquendo, and sort of they're hired and say fall short themselves, but Sox fans now, they're going to be pointing the fingers and say at the tag team of, you know, Reinsdorf and Hahn. But I think both Hinch and La Russa will probably best serve the White Sox. But what makes Sox fans think that either one of them, in my opinion, they may both turn down a job. You don't know. There could be a surprise number three pick in this, whoever it might be. But whoever's picked to be the next White Sox manager, watch out in the background, because there's a lot of teams looking for managers right now. But the Red Sox organization, in my opinion, they're going to be playing the old musical tune from Dave Loggins' 1970s hit, Please Come to Boston for the Springtime. But you know what? May the best man win, whoever it may be. But thanks a lot, Bruce, and thanks a lot, Matt. Enjoy your show.
Thank you, Joe.
All right, Joe. Yeah, good
Joe,
call.
A little more all over the place than even Eckersley right there. You know, Joe.
I will leave you with this before we take the break, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
The most important thing that the White Sox do in the offseason will not be hire a manager. It will be who is the veteran pitcher that they get to go into their mix. Are they in the Trevor Bauer running for a wild for free agency? Because if they are, that would be a bigger factor to me. If you put him with Keuchel and Giolito and some of those young pitchers, especially in the bullpen, if you get Trevor Bauer, that is a much bigger and more important situation for the White Sox winning in 2021 and 22 than any manager that they hire.
Well, let me ask you this, Bruce. If Trevor Bauer says that he would or would not play for a certain manager, I'm sure I would suspect that you don't want to take that into account. But the modern baseball world and the modern professional athlete world, Rick Hahn asked his players about things at the trade deadline. They had exit interviews where they talked about managers and talked about things like that. What if Trevor Bauer would or would not want to play for one of these guys? Do you ask him as your
Do you have any intel on that?
I think Trevor Bauer and Don Cooper would have been a match that would not have happened. I think that match would not
All right.
have taken place.
But, all right. So, I think Trevor Bauer will look at the Chicago White Sox, and you're right. He's an interesting guy. He will analyze things before he decides where to go. I can't think of a more young, exciting team to go to than the Chicago White Sox if you're Trevor Bauer and you want to go to the World Series the next couple of years.
I totally agree. And Tim Anderson, he has this great YouTube relationship and all of that. I don't know that Tony La Russa fits into that paradigm. Myself,
you know, again, in my perspective is the manager's job and who gets it is second to what the White Sox do to add to their pitching rotation.
Understood. He's Bruce Levine. It is Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score in a really fascinating news week. Danny Evans, who a longtime White Sox and Dodgers executive and a sports management consultant these days and much, much more, and a great guy to talk baseball with, will join us at the bottom of the hour. And Joe Maddon at the top of the hour. It's Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel on 670 The Score.
Brosso on the ground. Got a chance to turn a double play, and Altuve's throw is there. It's a double play to end it. And the crew chief says out, out, and that's a ball game. The Houston Astros have won three straight, and they have forced a game seven in this American League Championship Series.
Welcome back in on Inside the Clubhouse on 670 The Score. Bruce, 38 times a team has gone out 3-0 in a best of seven, and now two times the other team has forced a game seven, the 2004 Red Sox who won it, and now the 2020 Astros. So crazy goings on in these MLB playoffs right now. It is 670 Score. It's Inside the Clubhouse. And our next guest joins us on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford is in Melrose Park.
We are pleased to be able to talk to Dan Evans, who is one of the most accomplished baseball guys, both from a scouting and a metrics point of view, in the game over the last 40 years. And Dan, first of all, welcome in, and how are you doing? We're glad to have you on today.
I'm doing well, Bruce. Thanks to you and Matt for having me on, and hello to all my friends in the Midwest.
Tell us right now what you're doing with your sports management class that you're teaching online.
Oh, having lots of fun, Bruce. We've been doing it now for 8 years, and we have over 200 alumni throughout the game. It's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done, just mentoring young people, young men and women who want to get into baseball, a weekly online class, and it's just been absolutely an amazing addition to my life. I'm really, really proud of what we've accomplished, and we've got some wonderful people working throughout the game.
That's Sports Management Worldwide. You can find that agency and find those courses. And Dan, these days, also on the board of directors for Sabre and a member of the Baseball Perspectives Advisory Board. But we know you as the Lane Tech kid who goes to DePaul and ends up as an intern with the White Sox, an assistant GM, and then eventually the GM of the Dodgers. So you've been around the block just a little bit there, Danny Evans. Would you tell people what Tony La Russa's role is in sort of the history of sabermetrics, in like the development of analytics? Because that part of it, I think, has been misplaced angst in the conversation here, because Tony, as a binder guy, he and Dave Duncan, you know, those were some of the first guys on the forefront of this movement.
Well, and Matt, first of all, I'm really proud of my Lane Tech and my DePaul days. They really shaped me into who I am today. I love those two places. Those are key moments in my life. I was really lucky. I started with the White Sox as a 20-year-old junior at DePaul, and Tony La Russa was my boss. He and Roland Heeman were the guys, and Dave Duncan and I were extremely close. And we were just very quiet about what we were doing from a pioneering standpoint, using analytics and using metrics and video to try to enable us to get where we wanted to be. The difference between us and a lot of clubs, as Bruce knows really well, is really, really, really kept it confidential. It was really hard mm-hmm. for anyone to find out what we were doing. And Tony used data and used matchups extremely well. He was a huge fan of Sparky Anderson and of Earl Weaver. And Earl Weaver, you know, everybody knows him for his arguments and his winning and his World Series. But Earl Weaver and Casey Stengel were really the first people who used analytics extraordinarily. And Tony really wanted to get to the level of Earl Weaver and found ways, along with Charlie Lau and Dave Duncan, to give us some information, some answers to questions that we didn't have, things like playing a left-handed third baseman, things like when to pitch a certain guy. His gut was always the way he made decisions. I admired the fact that he was able to absorb a ton of information on a daily basis. But what he really did, guys, is he made players and staff highly accountable and utilized his knowledge of the game, his gut instincts and analytics to give him answers to questions that, you know, that perplexed him, that I think were standing in the way of him getting to the next level. And I think what people don't realize is how aggressive he was trying to advance that. He's one of the greatest managers of all time, and that hidden element about him is known by very few people.
Dan Evans, our guest on Inside the Clubhouse. He's Matt. I'm Bruce. We're here for you 52 weeks out of the year talking baseball, 9 to 11, every Saturday morning on The Score. Danny, taking that further, metrics-wise, with Tony, did you start with the 4x6 cards, or did the binder come first as far as information? And what exactly in those initial metrics that he used during a ball game, what was that information that he was looking at?
Bruce, great question. He was looking for batter pitcher matchups, vice versa, whether it was offense or defense. I marveled at the way he would position people for days off, knowing 3-4 days in advance how they matched up against a starting pitcher. You know, little things like that made a big difference from a communication standpoint. Tony does one thing better than any, or two things, I think, better than anybody I've ever seen. Number one, he manages a bullpen extraordinarily well. But I would say he manages a bullpen extraordinarily well with Dave Duncan leading him, because Duncan, for me, is the best pitching coach I've ever been around. But the other thing he did is Tony was always trying to put players in positions where they could thrive and not fail. He's really, really strategically sound when it comes to asking players to do things that they're capable of. So what we would do is we would look for places in the lineup or bullpen matchups that were ideal in terms of our squad. And whether it was making out a lineup, perhaps it was starting a guy on a rotation day, maybe using a bullpen matchup. He was so good at it, Bruce. And that's how it really originated. We did some things where we moved the dimensions of the ballpark through the front office simply because of findings we found from a computer-generated information bank. But Dave Duncan brought binders the first day I met him. He brought them to my house in Lincoln Square. And my parents and I kind of marveled at how prepared he was. And my goal was to fill up those folders and those binders. And I did that as well as I could.
See, this is, I think, really important stuff for people to realize, that Tony has been miscast as like an old baseball guy who wasn't in on some of this stuff or wouldn't be in on some of this stuff. But then the question is, how would he adapt now? Because guess what? Even in the 9 years since he's been a manager, baseball has progressed and changed and evolved even more. And I guess I think about it this way, Dan, the way that Tony and Dave kind of invented and perfected the bullpen. Eckersley as your one inning guy at the end. Cataray, right? Gene Nelson as your short righty. Honeycutt as your short lefty. Cataray as your long lefty. And Eric Plunk as your long righty, right? It's like, and everybody did that. Nowadays, it's all over the place. Diego Castillo might be used in the fifth, or he might be used in the ninth. There might be nine different guys you use. Would Tony be ready for this kind of Craig Council-infused, Tampa Rays-inspired, modern way that a bullpen is used that is very different from the way that he and Dave invented and perfected?
Hey, Matt, first of all, great point. That's great insight. He really did reinvent the bullpen use, and it was amazing to watch. And the game for the last 30 years really took on that look until the last few. I think one of the keys here would be the club would have to be constructed. And here's some, Bruce and I talked about this about 10 years ago. I think one of the best lessons I learned as a general manager and as an assistant is no matter how much you believe in something, the manager of the team has to be what you're thinking about when you construct a ball club. Because to give him the weapons that he needs to win or lose, you have to build it around his philosophical approach. Just because I like a certain guy as a general manager doesn't mean that the manager would use him that way. So I think the ball club would have to be constructed with La Russa's philosophical approach in mind. It needs to be his team. He'd have to have some veteran contributors on the bench, some guys who can do some platoon moves. You know, the bullpen, Matt, is only as good as the effectiveness as the pitchers. There's all sorts of ways to run a bullpen, but it just comes down to not taxing them, putting them in situations they can thrive, and having a game plan so everybody understands their role. For the listeners, players are great being led. They just need to be told what their role is so they're mentally focused for that day. You know, the White Sox were, 35 and 25 this year, and it wasn't good enough. It just wasn't good enough to get in to the playoffs where they wanted to be. It wasn't good enough in the first round. So in order for them to get to the next step, I think their players would have to be extremely accountable, because that's one thing that La Russa demands of his players: professionalism, preparation, and accountability. He doesn't tolerate excuses, and he doesn't tolerate a mediocre effort or preparation. So this young White Sox team would have to really step up their game mentally and from a professional standpoint to be able to be ready to win. There's no doubt he can translate to a successful manager in 2021. I mean, it would take some adaptation, but he's a brilliant guy, and he brings a track record and a credibility to the clubhouse unlike very few people. But here's my issue. A lot of those players never saw him manage. So his credibility is going to be more on paper, more because of a Cooperstown plaque. I saw it when Joe Torre took over the Dodgers, and there were some young players that just didn't buy it at first and didn't understand exactly who he was. And that's the challenge when somebody comes back. Luckily, Tony's been a part of the sport. He's been, you know, fully immersed. So I think the transition wouldn't be as great as it would be from some other people.
That's a great, great insight there, Dan. And I think it brings to the question, we're so used to these days it being a general manager's vision that the manager is a partner of. And Tony is used to a world where it's his vision and the general manager is a part of that. And I think you hit on that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but he's a team player, and that's the great thing about him. I mean, he took this 20-year-old kid in college and was great to me. I mean, you know, I remember throwing some things at him, and he'd give you this quizzical look, and then he wants you to explain it. So he's trusting. He's a team player. But I think, and I love Rick Hahn. Rick Hahn's one of the best people in the game. I think Rick and his staff would just have to adapt somewhat to tailor the club more to his managing style instead of what you said, Matt. It's keen insight. A lot of general managers jam managers today with their club and their philosophy. And I think that's wholly unfair and really unprofessional, simply because if you're going to fire the manager later on for him not winning with your philosophical approach and your roster without input, I think that's absolutely horrible. And I think it's a trend that some guys have taken, and you and Bruce are aware, guys have done that, and then they discard the manager as if the manager failed when, in fact, the front office failed. And to me, you're in this together, you build the team for him, and you win or lose together.
Danny, you know Jerry Reinsdorf. You worked for him for a long time. You've observed him for your entire career as a baseball man. Give us some insight as to what he is thinking and what he talks to Rick and to Kenny Williams about as to why he might want them to consider Tony La Russa as the next manager.
Well, first of all, Jerry's feel for the game is extraordinary. I mean, it's unbelievable. I've worked for quite a few owners in my career. No one's even close to his insight, his feel for the sport, and his networking ability after 40 years of the owner is extraordinary. He makes you very accountable, asks a lot of questions. Decisions aren't made. And, you know, I mean, Bruce, one of the things that people don't realize is why wouldn't an owner be involved? He's got a $1 billion business. And, I mean, I would be disappointed if an owner didn't want to be involved. But in his case, I think he's at a stage in his life, in his career as an owner, he'd like to win more time. And I think that's fabulous. And I think the surge of the White Sox in 2020, my gosh, what a fun team to watch, all kinds of enthusiasm. I think Jerry probably looks at this team as this is an opportunity for him to grab another ring and win another championship at a stage in his life where he's looking at, you know, he doesn't have an infinite number of years left as the owner. And my guess is he's looking, how can I best top off this team? But you have to give him credit. In 86, which was a blunderous year for the franchise, it was a disaster. It was easily the worst year I've ever experienced in the front office. It was just a nightmare experience. You know, La Russa got fired, one of the worst days of my career, and Duncan went with him. And a lot of other people went with him, too. For Jerry to look back at that and try to right a wrong, I give him a lot of credit, because even contemplating it is a major step. Most people wouldn't want to confront that because it's uncomfortable. But sometimes the uncomfortable move turns out to be a really good option. Whether they'll do it or not, you know, that doesn't just come down to Jerry. That comes down to Tony, too. But the fact that it's even in consideration shows me a lot of character, and it also shows me that he really gives a damn about his franchise and about the fans, that he's trying to explore whatever options there are at a very critical time in the franchise's history. This team is a really good club, but winning is not easy. It's tough. And whoever gets this job, you know, the expectations, guys, are not to get into the playoffs. They're to win the World Series. Otherwise, they wouldn't have made the move they made.
You bet, Danny. Danny Evans, a great friend, a great baseball man, and thank you so much for all the insight that you've given us today in this last 17 minutes, which has been phenomenal talking about Tony La Russa. We need to have you on again soon to talk about some other things, because there's so much in baseball going on with the meshing of scouting and metrics that are so essential, and nobody knows it better than Dan Evans. Dan, thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon.
Kind words, Bruce, and I love going on with you guys. And for everybody, keep your eyes on the Field of Dreams. There's going to be an announcement later this week that I think you'll all enjoy, and it'll be a big addition to Midwest baseball.
We'll do that, Danny. Thanks for the tease. We appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Danny Evans joining us on – take care, Dan. Danny Evans joining us in Inside the Clubhouse. We got to take a quick step out, because more baseball talk, more Chicago baseball talk, and hopefully more insight into this matter of Tony La Russa possibly joining the Chicago White Sox with Joe Maddon at the top of the hour.
Looking forward to it. It's Matt Spiegel, Bruce Levine here on Inside the Clubhouse and 670 The Score, this segment of which is brought to you by Amazon. Great, great stuff from Danny Evans this hour about Tony La Russa's history, the possible future. And I thought, Bruce, the conversation about Joe Torre and how some of the young kids in L.A. just didn't understand or really care about Joe Torre's resume is very possibly relevant to the conversation. But I'm looking forward very much to our next guest at the top of the hour.
Joe Maddon will be joining us, the Angels manager, former Cub iconic manager, to talk a little baseball, including his relationship with Tony La Russa. Tony, an advisor and to the front office, and to Joe and everybody in the organization there with the Angels. So it should be insightful and fun. And just to hear Joe talk about managing in the COVID era that we will look back upon and just kind of absorb as time moves on. That is it. Joe Maddon joining us in just a few minutes.
On 670 The Score, Inside the Clubhouse, he's Bruce Levine and Matt Spiegel. One more hour to go. Your interactions continue at 312-644-6767.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.